Okay, good afternoon. This is Sarah Coleman. I'm coming back with another interview today. Today I decided to do something different. I have focused on the men that are incarcerated, and so I'm going to interview a special guest today. I'm going to interview my brother Paul, and he has been in the prison system, and he is successfully I've been out for 20 years now, so I would love, I would like to talk about the other side of, coming home and staying home, because he is in, the few, and prayerfully, I hope that it turns into the many. So without further ado, say hello, please.
Hello.
Hi. Okay, Paul, so I would like to just have you give a little bit of background, about your history, your time that you were incarcerated. What were you charged with?
Drugs. All of my charges were drug related. I was incarcerated. First time I ever was incarcerated. Wow. This truck behind me was breaking real hard, like by the rear end. I was incarcerated in the late 80s. I did 4 years, 4 months, 16 days. Got out, and not even a year, about a year and a month later, right at 13, 14 months, I was charged with a federal crime, federal conspiracy, which pretty much was for the same charge I had. It's just, my case got chopped over to federal, and I went back and did, a little over 8 years. Yeah, so within about 13, 14 month period, I'm doing 4 years, 4 months, 16 days, I went back for pretty much the same charge. That got enhanced. Those of y'all who are aware of the federal system know that they can use your previous background to enhance you on your pre-sentence investigation. So, was released, believe October of 2002, and this October made 20 years that I've been home.
Okay, so let me back up a little bit. So the first stint, the 4 years, that was in what? That was you did state time.
Was that state? I did state time. That was state. That was for drugs. That wasn't a federal charge. It was a state charge.
Okay.
And prior to that, I had minor, just misdemeanors in my background. Never was in jail for no period of time. I've always made bonds for those previous charges. That wasn't like nothing major charge, but I'm not trying to minimize a charge, but it wasn't a felony.
Okay, can you take me to the state time, the first time, just being in the courtroom and, hearing. So how much time did you actually get? Were you sentenced to the first time?
I was a youngest, I got one day in 9 years. It's called a CYO sentence. So,
what is CYO for those that don't know?
Community youth offender.
Okay.
Now, I was young. I was 19, something like that. 19 years old.
Yes.
19. Well, no, I'm sorry. I was 20. My apologies. I was 20. 20 years old.
So what was it like going in, a 20-year-old going into a prison system? What was that like?
It was stressful because it was the unknown. You don't know. You hear all the stories, all the horror stories about bad things that happen to people in prison.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, I was a little apprehensive, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I've never been one to carry myself as a victim, so I didn't get victimized there. While I was there, I worked out, made sure. I boxed prior to going to prison, so I knew I was going to be able to take care of myself. Anything can happen. You can't get jumped. No matter how tough you think you are, there's always somebody out there that has the potential to be tougher. It was stressful. I mean, I've never been with my family. At that young age, it was a change. Definitely a culture shock. But, I survived it.
So let me ask you, when you went in, were you in a relationship with anyone at the time? I mean, what was the hardest thing to leave behind?
Was my family and, at the time, my fiance. She was and still is the love of my life. Leaving her behind, but she loved me so much. That's where my story is different than a lot of people that's been incarcerated. I've always had blessed with my wife. She's my wife now, and my family. I've had good family throughout my incarcerations. My family was there, and that.
I'm sorry, he's going out because he's driving. Could you repeat that? You went out. A little bit.
I said I've always had great family support, and I was in a relationship, even Beyonce and my fiance. She was there for me, as well as my family, siblings, parents. At the time, both my parents were alive.
Okay.
Siblings and my wife. She was my fiance then, but my wife. She's my wife now. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. So the state and federal. So take me to the second time that you were you disappointed that only, you know, a little over a year later, you know, that you were going back to prison, and this time, you know, into federal prison?
Yeah, this time I did twice as much as I did the first time. I mean, I was disappointed. If I can back up a little bit, my first incarceration, I was bitter, upset, angry. I didn't do anything. So the only thing I came back with was muscles and a dream of being the largest drug dealer I possibly could. I was never a corner hustler. I always had people on my team. Nothing else. I was a middleman to a lot of people. I left prison after doing that, pissed off. Yeah, like same things, same people. Almost some of my people were incarcerated after I came home. But I knew what I was coming home to. I knew what I was going to do. I didn't want to make no change. But when the feds locked me up, another form of slavery, in my opinion, you can use somebody's statement against you and not get caught with nothing. And I was wise enough not to go to trial. Because I probably still be locked up now. I blew trial with the feds that you're not playing. It was a disappointment now, more so with my wife, because when I was locked up, May 3rd of 1990, I married the love of my life. She married me. Awesome woman, beautiful, intelligent. She stood by me, married me while I was incarcerated. I came home. Even though I had that foundation, I still was wanting to go be in the streets and do what I knew. All of my people I looked up to and my family, though my family was in the drug trade. So I went back to doing what I knew best, or I thought I knew best. Because obviously I'm not that great at, because I got locked up again for pretty much the same charge. And enhanced for charges I did. I was convicted of previously. Now, never once will you say, you hear me say that I was innocent. I was not innocent. I was a drug dealer. I did sell a lot of drugs. I did poison the community.
So let me ask you, let's go back to the plea. When you said that you were smart enough not to take it to trial, mentally, how did you prepare yourself? What was the offer? How much time did they come to you with?
Initially, 20 something years. Without a blue child, I would have got 360 months, which is 30 years.
Wow.
But I know people that were in the county jail with me. I've seen a couple of guys that came back from prison that was talking about to get sentenced because they was on probation violation or parole violation.
Yeah.
And it was like, they incarceration rate, their conviction rate, I'm sorry, is like 96% then.
Wow.
So I knew, they said, you go trial, if you got life letters, they call it alphabet sentence in the feds, there's no parole, so you die there. You'll die in it, unless you get some type of relief from your sentence. There's no parole in the federal system.
Wow. So they offered you what was the final offer?
That's why I did that 8 years. It's like 10 years, 10 and a half years.
10 and a half years. So let me just ask you, just hearing 10 and a half years. I mean, what were your thoughts prior to taking it?
This is ridiculous. I mean, 10 and a half years for pretty much the same charge that I had before. For conspiracy, where because it was crack law, that 100-to-1 ratio. I found it hard to believe that you could use the words three different people and get you locked up, and you go to trial no matter what the three people background were. It's like it's gold, like God is so, is a witness against you in the eyes of the federal court system. So I was again smart enough not to go to trial, and my attorney got me the best possible plea that I could get, being that I was enhanced for I felt like it was double jeopardy, because I already did time for this charge previously, or they can go into your background and enhance you for what you did, and enhance it, they can add on more time to your sentence, which they did.
Wow. And guys, I was actually there, so it's funny because he's saying that it's coming up on 20 years next month, and listening, I'm back in that courtroom. I remember, you would have to know his wife. I'm sitting there and I'm devastated and I'm crying and I'm devastated, and I met with him and I remember, you know, trying to be supportive, you know, of him and stuff. And it's funny that what I remember, because his wife was like, "Damn, Letha, where's your mascara at?" You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, even though, you know, he was getting ready to be taken out of the home and stuff, you know, she was present enough with me to, like, you know, put your best foot forward. But now, I mean, like, it's like a punch in my gut, because he is, you know, my best friend. You know what I mean? Like, we've always been closer. I'm the baby of the family, and then he's next to me. So, you know, what people need to know is, it's not just the men that are getting locked up. When you lock, you know, when you take a father out of the home, you're taking husbands out of the home, you're taking brothers out of the family unit, you're taking protectors, you know, all types of stuff. And like you said, he's not a victim. You know, he did sell these drugs and stuff, but, you know, we're not the ones that's going overseas and dropping this into our neighborhoods and, you know, going over and getting the cachet of weapons and all this bunch of stuff. This was intentionally done. You know, we're talking about the crack era. We're talking about the 80s, you know, when it was intentionally, you know, placed into our communities and stuff like that. So let me just go back to you for a second, Paul. So, okay, the 10 years going into the federal system, what was that like?
Actually, the federal prison, it was better than state. The federal system was cleaner. You actually met a lot of people that was kind of on your level. When I say on your level, as far as they didn't have too many, unless you were a driver for someone, they had people that was actually big in their communities of selling drugs. So it was that type of people that I ran across that they wasn't the rapists, but we did have side molesters on our compound. But it was just a totally different breed of criminal, if I can say that. It was like the upper echelons of criminals. They wasn't your average crackheads that, you know, commit a crazy crime and then go to jail for robbery or something like that. These guys all, most of them could have ran a Fortune 500 company that I ran across that was kind of in my circle. I didn't really click up with too many people, but these guys were highly intelligent, highly motivated, and they were providers of their families. It was just ill-gotten gains. We got our money through, again, ill-gotten gains. But federal system allowed me to look at myself. I never said I made a mistake. I made a choice. I chose to sell drugs. My background, as far as being raised, was not the easiest, but I chose to sell drugs. I'm a firm believer. You said you made a mistake. You're not gonna change that behavior because a mistake is like you giving yourself a crutch. Oh, I made a mistake. You're not gonna change that behavior if you give yourself an out. I made a mistake. So no, I didn't make a mistake. I made a choice. I chose to sell drugs. So I made a choice when I was incarcerated. I went there with a GED education. That's it. I quit high school my senior year in high school on honor roll. I was in honor roll, honors classes then. Quit high school, got in the streets, was on probation, was forced to get my GED. I tested so high when I had my GED, they was like, wow, you ever thought about going to college? I was like, no, I'm not going to college. I got other things, other dreams and aspirations. But with all that time I had in the federal system, I was fortunate once I went to one institution in particular, they had a great education program. So I had to test out. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna make myself employable. Whenever I do get released from prison, I'm not gonna go back to the lifestyle I had before, because again, obviously I wasn't that good because I got caught twice. So I knew that that wasn't really a choice for me. And then I got tired of putting my wife through the drama. And I had, at the time, I actually had three kids in the same year, but I was estranged from the other two. My daughter really needed me. So I made a prayer. What really made me change is I got put in isolation, got into a fight, beat up a dude pretty good. They put me in isolation. I had to be in there for about 45 days, 23 hours. Actually, it was longer than 23. Every 3 days, they would let you out to take a shower. And every 3 days, they would let you go get some rec time, cage, within the cage from prison for like an hour. So that's 3 hours a week. I was in there for, I think, about 45 days. Anyway, across the hall from me was the criminally insane. Imagine being locked in this cage. And directly across the hall from you, you hear some of the weirdest, craziest, depressingest things in your life. So after a couple of weeks of that, I felt like the walls was closing in on me, and I was about to lose my sanity. So they give you a Bible. I read the Bible, and this particular day, it was that noise, that environment was getting to me. And I got on my knees, and I prayed, like, to God, say, whoever you are, if you're real, if you allow me to make it out of this isolation with my sanity intact, I promise you I'll make some real changes in my life. I've been saying I want to go to school. Anybody that's been around me always said I was intelligent, which I kind of knew. So I said I was going to definitely pursue education. Now, with that being said, I went from having a GED education to 3 associate's degrees, a couple of certifications, universal. I was certified in prison because they have a unicorn system that where a lot of people work. Mm-hmm. That's the job retail in prison. With that unicorn, they made glasses for all the prisons in the BOP. So they had a program there, and a lot of folks didn't want to do it because it was a lot of math. It's a lot of math, geometry, little trig, some calculus, but not much. But anyway, I tested high on that, and they allowed me into that program. I got ABO, American Board, ABC, I'm sorry, certification for optics, NCLE, National Contact Lens Examination. I passed all of those, graduated from that, got my associates in optometry, worked in junior course, so I can actually get some hands on. I quit that because I wanted to go back and get my associates. My first associate was in liberal arts and science. Then I had a really intensive program. It was for associates as well. This was for business administration. I applied, was accepted. Actually graduated there with honors, a perfect 4.0. And then Shaw University, I had a satellite program there, and I finished all of, I was one semester away from graduating with my bachelor's degree in business administration and concentration in marketing. I did not want to finish that in prison, so I left that last semester so I could finish on the streets, because I said, I'm going to need some type of structure when I come home, that I wanted to, you know, let my family, because they would come to see and graduate in prison. I went in to see and graduate my bachelor's degree on the streets, which I did when I was released.
I was there.
I graduated with honors with my bachelor's degree from Shaw University. And throughout that whole time, my family and my wife supported me. But I ended up getting divorced in 2000. Because my wife found out that I had other kids, you know, out there, and she was like in her late 20s. She got tired of putting up with my stuff, and I was a coward. I didn't tell her that I had all these kids, so I didn't want to lose her. But we divorced, and in 2000, I got out, and 2002, well, she stayed in contact with me. She brought my daughter to see me. She still helped me financially while I was there, and it was so odd. When I got out, I never stopped loving this woman. I've only really truly been in love, total love, one time in my life, and I'm still in love with this woman. And today we've been together for 34 years, married 32. She's been my rock. It hasn't been easy, but all the crap I put her through, she's going through menopause now, so anybody married knowing a woman that's going through menopause, you know that. Pray for me, because it's been a little difficult, but I'm not going anywhere. All the crap I put up there, I didn't deal with this. But when I came home from prison, she was there for me. I graduated with honors again. My family got to see me graduate. And I was like, I did get a job in optics right when I got out. But they would not, they capped me as far as how much money I could make. I think I was only making like $40,000 a year. And I knew, I looked at the sales from every location I was at and realized that, you know, the sales went up. Every location they had me at, the sales went up. They messed up and let me see the information. So after I graduated from Shaw, my wife sat me down. We was having a pillow talk. She was like, you're going to be able to pick and choose whatever job that you want because you're prepared. Mentally, you're prepared. You have the education. And it was between being a pharmaceutical rep, or being a licensed loan officer. And I knew that being a pharmaceutical rep, because of my background, I was going to have some issues with it. Lo and behold, I got hired at AmeriQuest Mortgage as a loan officer. But because of my background, they would not allow me to get my license. My wife and I hired an attorney, and I had my say in court. Like, long story short, I got my license. I became a licensed loan officer. I had to take an examination. I missed one out of 100 questions.
Wow.
I was upset I missed that one. because I studied for it really hard. I got my law officer license, so now I went from being incarcerated, so I'm making six figures a year as a licensed law officer. I was very good at my job. I won a contest. I was one of the top loan officers on the East Coast. So won a trip to Maui, which my federal probation won't let me go because it wasn't within in the United States. I won a trip to Vegas. It was crazy. They let me go to Sin City. But I had to check in with the Las Vegas Police Department right when I got there.
And so what are you still in the industry now? What are you doing now?
No, in 2009, the market crashed. And that means my company went out of business. And that was a low point in my life because a lot of people that worked under me got jobs in banks. They wouldn't allow me to get a job in the bank because of my background.
Wow.
And again, that affected me mentally because I was used to going out and getting jobs that I knew I could do. I knew I was more than qualified to be a loan officer in a bank. So I went and worked. My wife and I purchased care from mother's daycare from her. And we ran a daycare for many years. We actually owned it. I was the kitchen guy at the daycare for a couple of years. But now I work, this is called a title abstractor. That's a fancy word saying a title searcher. So all the courthouses that I used to be afraid to go into, I go now to do research, to get information, to help. Say, for instance, if you were to try to sell your home or even a commercial property, you have to do a title search. That's what I do, to see if there's any judgments, liens, or anybody that have claim to the property. Like right now, I'm on the way to Kinston, North Carolina, which is 3 hours away from where I live, to go to the courthouse, the clerk of court, to get an estate file. I got to go make copies of that. When I get back to my office, I got to send it off to the attorney that requested it, or the other search that requested, because it's not actually my search, it's somebody else's. So I'm going to pick up some documents for them.
Okay. So let me ask you this. I'm backing up just a little bit, if I could. So had you not been motivated yourself, do you think that the system is, do you think that it's set up for failure or for success for the guys that are returning home?
I'm a firm believer in this. I mean, you know, you can't do what got you in there. There are some people that are sent to prison that were innocent of charge. But even if they were innocent, unless they went in with a degree, not necessarily a degree, or a trade, they have to make themselves employable. Doors is going to be closed in your face anyway. Being a black man in America, I mean, you're already born at a disadvantage if you allow that to seep into your mindset. I'm a firm believer in, this is one of my philosophies. I think it's from Benjamin Franklin. If you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. You gonna live up to or down to your own expectations. And I always expect myself to be successful. And I prepare myself for success. I'm sorry, what was your question again?
No, I was just wondering if you thought that transitioning out of prison and stuff, if you're not motivated yourself, did you think that they had programs and stuff in place, you know, to help the guys to come out and be marketable?
I was fortunate enough to go to again, but they have since then taken out these educational programs because a lot of gentlemen were actually taking advantage of it when I was there. No, most prisons are set up to warehouse people, well, to care less if you trying to make changes. They just gonna keep you in prison, warehouse you, do the bare minimum, so you could do your job if you ever get out. So no, this is definitely a disadvantage.
Okay, Well, we're coming up on the 30, and we just actually hit the 30-minute mark. I'm not finished with you. I feel like I could go on and on, but I'm going to stop it here. For the listeners, there is going to be a part two to this. There's, you know, more that I want to know. Paul, I appreciate your time. Thank you. I'm extremely proud, you know, as your sister, I'm extremely proud, that you were able to not just survive in prison, but come out here and, you know, take that education, take that promise, you know, that you made in solitary confinement, and, you know, you've done it. I've watched you, you know what I'm saying? I've watched, you know, the ups, the downs, you know, everything. But one thing that I've always admired, you know, about you is you never gave up. You understand? And it shows, you know, your work shows, you know, in your family, you know, your marriage now, being as solid as it is, you know, you know, working, you know, the way that you do and stuff. So, you know, as your sister, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, because you made me a promise, you know, back then that was going to be your last time, you know what I'm saying, in prison and stuff. So I just want to take the time out to tell you, thank you first and foremost for the interview. And then thank you, you know, for being a man of your word.
You're welcome, sis. And I would like to officially, which, you know, goes without saying, thank you for your support, because you was always there for me, the good, bad, the ugly. You never touch your back on me. And that's what's critical for people that's incarcerated. They need to have that support system. They actually have to have that support system in place. If not, the possibility of them going back is great, 20-fold. It takes a village, and they still need that village after you come home from being incarcerated to succeed. But it also has to come from within. You have to want to succeed and then prepare yourself for success. If not, I mean, you can't expect to get a great job, but you don't have the tools to do the job. You just set yourself up for failure. But again, I know you've been trying to get me to do this interview for a while. And I'm doing it because of you. I adore you. And thank you for letting me have my say.
You are welcome. Thank you. I'm signing off now, guys. Thank you to my listeners.